I caused this mind to think, and it was not a curious mind. I began pushing buttons and found it did not want to be summoned by me. Dr. N, what did you expect? S, from my review in the sphere, the ring, I saw the end result of an adult mind, but I didn't see all the difficulties with the baby's mind, when it was new. Dr. N, I see, and you are saying this mind considered your intrusion as a threat? S, no, only a nuisance. Eventually, I was accepted and the child and I adapted to each other. Dr. N, let's go back to your statement about pushing buttons. Please explain to me what this means to you with a standard entry into the fetus of your choice. S, when I enter a developing brain 1 AM accustomed to joining around the 4th month, our guides give us some latitude here, but I never enter after the 6th month. When I enter the womb of the mother, I create a red light of tight energy and direct it up and down the spinal column of the baby, following a network of neurons to the brain. Dr. N, why do you do that? S, this tells me about the efficiency of thought transmission, the sensory relays. Dr. N, then, what do you do? S, play my red light around the dura mater, the outer layer of the brain, gently. Dr. N, why red light? S, this allows me to be especially sensitive to the physical feelings of this new person. I meld my energy warmth to the gray blues of brain matter. Before I get there, the brain is simply gray. What I am doing is turning on the lights in a dark room with a tree in the middle. Dr. N, you lost me. Explain about the tree. S, intensely, the tree is the stem. I park myself between the two hemispheres of the brain to get a ringside seat as to how this system will function. Then I move around the branches of the tree to investigate the circuitry. I want to know how dense the energy is in the fibers around the wheel of the cerebral cortex folding around the thalamus. I want to learn how this brain thinks and senses things. Dr. N, how important is energy density or the lack of it in the brain? S, a mind that has excessive density in certain areas means there are blockages which inhibit the bridges between efficient neuron activity. I want to make some adjustments in these roadblocks with my energy if I can, you know, while the brain is still forming. Dr. N, you can make a difference in how the brain develops. S, laughs at me, of course. Did you think souls are passengers on a train? I stimulate these areas ever so slightly. Dr. N, deliberately obtuse? Well, one thought you and the baby are both in miniature by the way you exhibit intelligence in the beginning. S, laughs, not until birth. Dr. N, are you saying that you can improve brainwave function with all those activities you have described? S, that is our expectation. The whole idea is matching your vibrational levels and capabilities with that of the natural rhythms of the child's brain waves, their electrical flow, with exuberance. I think my host bodies are grateful for my assistance in improving the speed of thought over bridges, stops and then adds, maybe this is wishful thinking. Dr. N, what do you see in the future for the brain with continued evolution and the influence of souls as a stimulus? S, mental telepathy. Certainly, I have had younger souls who appear to be more inactive after body entry than case 66. This is a far sight better than agitating the child by ineptness from overzealous, inexperienced souls. The average soul probes their new host for information, but in a way that has been described as tickling the child to give it pleasure. Essentially, this is an important time for integration between body and soul, with the mother also mentally entering into this process of getting acquainted. By no means is the seat of the soul limited to the brain. Soul energy radiates throughout the whole body of the child. Case 66 is a medical doctor. My next case comes from a non-medically oriented client about the union of two entities to form one whole as a new life begins. Each soul has its own preferences about when and how they wish to enter the fetus. The following case gives us an indication of the procedures used by a very considerate, evolved soul. Case 67, Dr. N, tell me what it is like to enter the mind of a baby and when you usually enter. S, in the beginning I think of it as a betrothal. I entered my current body in the 8th month. I prefer to enter on the late side when the brain is larger, so I have more to work with during the coupling. Dr. N, isn't there a downside to entering late? I mean, you are then dealing with a more independent individual. S, some of my friends feel that way, I don't. I want to be able to talk with the child when there is more mutual awareness. Dr. N, being tense to elicit response. Talk to a fetus. What are you saying? S, laughs at me. Of course we interact with the child. Dr. N, take me through this slowly. Who says what first? S, the child may say, who are you? I answer, a friend who has come to play and be a part of you. Dr. N, with deliberate provocation, isn't that deceitful? You haven't come to play. You have come to occupy this mind. S, oh, please. Who have you been talking to? This mind and my soul were created to be together. Do you think I am some sort of foreign intruder on Earth? I have joined with babies who welcomed me as if I were expected. Dr. N, there are souls who have had a different experience. S, look, I know souls who are clumsy. They go in like bulls in a china shop with their over-eagerness to get started with an agenda. Too much frontal energy all at once sets up resistance. Dr. N, in your current lifetime, was the child at all anxious about your entry? S, no, they don't know enough yet to be anxious. One, begin by caressing the brain. I am able to immediately project warm thoughts of love and companionship. Most of the babies just accept me as being part of themselves. A few hold back, like my current body. Dr. N, oh, really? What was unusual about this fetus? S, it wasn't a big deal. Its thoughts were, now that you are here, who am I going to be? Dr. N, I think that's a very big deal. Essentially, the child is acknowledging that its identity depends on you. S, patiently, the child has begun to ask itself, who am I? Some children are more aware of this than others. A few are resistant because, to them, we are an irritation to their inert beginnings, like a pearl in an oyster. Dr. N, so you don't feel the child senses it is being forced to give up something of its individuality? S, no, we have come as souls to give the child depth of personality. Its being is enhanced by our presence. Without us they would largely function as unripened fruit. Dr. N, but does the child understand any of this before birth? S, it only knows that I want to be friends so we can do things together. We begin by communicating with each other with simple things such as an uncomfortable body position in the mother's womb. There have been times when the umbilical cord was wrapped around the neck of the baby and I have calmed the child where otherwise it might have squirmed and made things worse. Dr. N, please continue with how you assist the baby. S, I prepare the child for birth, which is going to be a shock when it happens. Imagine being forced out of a warm, comfortable, secure womb into the bright lights of a hospital room, the noise, having to breathe air, being handled. The child appreciates my help because my primary goal now is to combat fear by soothing the brain with assurances that everything will be fine. Dr. N, I wonder what it was like for children before souls came to help them? S, the brain was too primitive then to conceptualize the trauma of birthing. There was little awareness. Laughs, of course I wasn't around in those days. Dr. N, are you able to calm anxious mothers in any way? S, we must be proficient. During much of my existence I had little or no effect on my mothers if they were frightened, sad or angry during pregnancy. You must be able to align your energy vibrations with both the child and the mother's natural body rhythms. You have to harmonize three sets of wave levels, which includes your own, to soothe the mother. I might even have the baby kick the mother to let her know we are all right. Dr. N, then at birth, I suppose the hard work of the merger is over? S, to be honest, the merger isn't complete yet for me. I talk to my body as a second entity up to the age of 6. It is better not to force a full meld right away. We play games as two people for a while. Dr. N., I have noticed a lot of young children talk to themselves as if they were with an imaginary playmate. Is that their soul? S., grinning. That's right, although our guides enjoy playing with us as young children too. And have you also noticed the elderly talking to themselves a lot? They are preparing for separation at the other end in their own way. Dr. N., in general, how do you feel about coming back to Earth in life after life? S., as a gift. This is such a multifaceted planet. Sure, this place brings heartache, but it is delightful too and incredibly beautiful. The human body is a marvel of form and structure. One never ceases to be awed by each new body, the many different ways I can express myself in them, especially in the most important way, love. 10. Our spiritual path, the concept of our resurrection into beings who belong in a kingdom of eternity goes far back into human antiquity. From our early origins, we have believed that life and afterlife are sustained by divine intelligence as a single, unified whole. These sentiments come from the memories of many people I have regressed to the Stone Age. For ages since then, we thought of the soul world as another state of consciousness rather than an abstract place. The afterlife was considered to be only an extension of our physical life. One believes the world is returning to those concepts, which were beautifully expressed by Spinoza, who said, "All the cosmos is a single substance of which we are a part. God is not an external manifestation, but everything that is." I consider such legends as Atlantis and Shangri-La as having their origins in the eternal longing we feel for recapturing a utopia that once existed but is now lost. In the superconscious mind of every person I have ever placed in deep hypnosis lies the memory of a utopian home. Originally, the concept of utopia was intended to illustrate ideas, not a society. My subjects see the spirit world as a community of ideas. In this sense, the afterlife involves self-purification of thought. Beings who are still incarnating are far from perfect, as demonstrated by my cases. Nevertheless, we can justifiably think of our existence in the spirit world as utopian because there is a universal harmony of spirit. Righteousness, honesty, humor and love are the primary foundations of our life after life. After reading the information contained in this book, I know it must seem cruel that the utopia of our dreams does exist within all of us but is blocked from conscious memory by amnesia. When some of these blocks are overcome through hypnosis, meditation, prayer, channeling, yoga, imagination and dreams, or a mental state reached through physical exertion, there is a sense of personal empowerment. Some 2,400 years ago, Plato wrote about reincarnation and said that souls must travel over Lethe, the river of forgetfulness, whose waters produce a loss of memory from our true nature. The sacred truths of our etheric history can be recovered today because we are able to circumvent the conscious mind and reach the unconscious, which was not immersed in the river of forgetfulness. Our higher self remembers our past triumphs and transgressions in a selective way, whispering to us across time and space. Our personal spirit guides endeavor to give us the best from both worlds, the ethereal and material. Each new baby is given a fresh start with an open future. Our spiritual masters wish to produce karmic opportunity without the constraints of our knowing those pitfalls we experienced in former lives. They become more lenient in a selective way with amnesia as we engage in self-discovery. This is our best route to wisdom. The question has been fairly asked as to why amnesia blocks about our spiritual life have been loosened to permit research into the spirit world. I think about this issue a great deal because now in the 21st century I expect younger hypnotherapists to go far beyond what my generation has been able to accomplish in unlocking the spiritual mind. I feel the reasons for our ability to discover more of the mysteries about life on the other side is a direct outgrowth of living in the 20th century. The advancement of innovative techniques in hypnosis would have to be listed as a consideration. However, I believe there are more compelling reasons why our amnesia has become less constrictive over the last 30 years. Never before has such a variety of drugs been so pervasive in the human population. These mind-altering chemicals imprison the soul within a body encumbered by a mental fog. The soul's essence is unable to express itself through a chemically addicted mind. I feel the planners on the other side have lost patience with this aspect of human society. There are other reasons as well. As the 20th century draws to a close, we live in a frantic, rage-filled, overpopulated, environmentally degraded world. The mass destruction of our planet in the last 100 years from all sources is unequaled in human experience. I do not have a dark vision of the future, despite my comments. It may be true that to the people who are living in an era, their time seems more decadent than the last. Yet we have made great advancements culturally, politically and economically in the last 100 years. In many ways the world is a far safer place than it was in 1950. Internationally, nations have more social conscience and commitments to work for peace than ever before in our long history of monarchies and dictatorships, which were still very much in evidence at the start of the 20th century. What we face in the 21st century is the eroding of individualism and human dignity in an overcrowded society dominated by materialism. Globalization, urban sprawl and bigness is a formula for loneliness and disassociation. Many people believe in nothing but survival. I believe the spiritual door has been opened to our immortality because to deny us this knowledge has proven to be counterproductive. In the spirit world of my experience, if something on earth isn't working, it can be changed. Amnesiac blocks were set in place with human beings to prevent preconditioned responses to certain karmic events. However, the benefits of amnesia may no longer outweigh the drawbacks of lives existing within a vacuum of chemically induced apathy. There are too many people trying to escape from reality because they do not see their identity as having purpose or meaning. Drugs and alcohol aside, in overcrowded, high-tech societies around the world, people have an emptiness of spirit because they are ruled by their body-ego senses. They have little or no connection to their real self. Because each of us is a unique being, different from all others, it is incumbent upon those who desire internal peace to find their own spirituality. When we totally align ourselves to belief systems based upon the experience of other people, I feel we lose something of our individuality in the process. The road to self-discovery and shaping a personal philosophy not designed by the doctrines of organizations takes effort, but the rewards are great. There are many routes to this goal, which begins by trusting in yourself. Camus tells us, both the rational and irrational lead to the same understanding. Truly, the path traveled matters little, the will to arrive is enough. Visions of the afterlife lie within each of us as a sanctuary while we travel the maze of Earth's pathways. The difficulty in uncovering fragments of our eternal home is due in no small part to life's distractions. It is not a bad thing to accept life as it is, asking no questions and assuming that in the end what is supposed to happen will happen. However, for those with a longing to know more, simple acceptance of life is totally unsatisfying. For some travelers, life's mysteries cry out for attention, if being alive is to have any meaning. In the search for our own path of spirituality, it is wise to ask, what sort of behavioral code do I believe in? Some theologians suggest that non-religious people are attempting to cut loose from moral and ethical responsibility dictated to us in scripture from a higher authority. However, we are not evaluated after death by our religious associations, but rather by our conduct and values. In the spirit world I am familiar with, we are measured more by what we do for others rather than ourselves. If traditional religious activity serves your purpose and provides you with spiritual sustenance, you are probably motivated by a belief in scripture and perhaps the desire for comradeship in worship. The same attractions are true with people who join metaphysical groups and derive satisfaction from following the ideas of prescribed spiritual texts with like-minded people. While such practices may be comforting and edifying for your spiritual growth, it must be recognized that these pathways do not suit everyone. If there is no inner peace, it does not matter what sort of spiritual affiliation you have. Disengagement in life arises when we separate ourselves from our inner power by taking the position that we are all alone, without spiritual guidance, because no one upstairs is listening. 1. Have great respect for people with abiding faith in something, since for a large part of my life I had no solid foundation of spirituality, despite my searching. There are atheists and agnostics who take the position that since religious and spiritual knowledge cannot be based upon natural or proven evidence, it is unacceptable. Simply having faith is not truly revealed knowledge to the skeptic. I identify with these people because I was one of them. My faith in the hereafter slowly began as an outgrowth of my participation with subjects in hypnosis. This is a discipline I believed in professionally before my research discoveries. Nevertheless, my own spiritual awareness was also the result of years of personal meditation and introspection about this research. Spiritual perception must be an individual quest or it has no meaning. We are greatly influenced by our own immediate reality, and we can act on that reality one step at a time without the necessity of seeing too far into the distance. Even steps in the wrong direction give us insight into the many paths designed to teach us. To bring the soul self into harmony with our physical environment, we are given freedom of choice to exercise free will in the search for the reasons why we are here. On the road of life, we must take responsibility for all our decisions without blaming other people for life's setbacks that bring unhappiness. As I mentioned, to be effective in our mission, we are expected to help others on their paths whenever possible. By helping others, we help ourselves. Reaching out to others is inhibited when we nurture our own uniqueness to such an extent that we become totally self-absorbed. However, being an absentee landlord in your own house makes you ineffective as a person as well. You were not given your body by a chance of nature. It was selected for you by spiritual advisors, and after previewing their offerings of other host bodies, you agreed to accept the body you now have. Thus, you are not a victim of circumstance. You are entrusted with your body to be an active participant in life, not a bystander. We must not lose sight of the idea that we accepted this sacred contract of life, and this means the roles we play on Earth are actually greater than ourselves. Our soul energy was created by a higher authority than we can know in our present state of development. Consequently, we must focus on who we are as a person to find that fragment of divinity within us. The only limitations to personal insight are self-imposed. If the spiritual paths of others have no relevance to you, this does not mean the way designed for your needs is non-existent. The reason for our being who we are is a major truth in life. Where one person may find an aspect of that truth manifested to them, it will not be in the same place for another. Essentially, we are alone with our soul. Yet people who feel lonely haven't quite found themselves. Self-discovery of the soul has to do with self-possession. The capturing of our individual essence is like falling in love. Something within you lying dormant is awakened at a point in your life by a stimulus. The soul flirts with you at first, tempting you to go further with delights that are only seen from a distance. The initial attraction of self-discovery begins with an almost playful touching of the conscious by the unconscious mind. As the intensity of wanting to fully possess our inner self grows, we are drawn irresistibly into a more intimate connection. Knowing our soul becomes a marriage of fidelity to one's self. The fascinating aspect about self-discovery is that when you hear that inner voice, you instantly recognize it. Based on my practice, I am convinced that everyone on this planet has a personal spiritual guide. Spirit guides speak to our inner mind if we are receptive. While some guides are more easily reached than others, each of us has the ability to call upon and be heard by these guides. There are no accidents in life, yet people get confused by what they perceive to be randomness. It is this philosophy that works against thoughts of spiritual order. It becomes an easy next step to feel we have no control in our lives, and trying to find ourselves is pointless since nothing we do matters anyway. Believing in the randomness of events negatively influences our reaction to situations and allows us to avoid thinking about explanations for them. Having a fatalistic outlook on life by saying it's God's will or even it's my karma contributes to inaction and lack of purpose. That which is meaningful in life comes in small pieces or large chunks all at one time. Self-awareness can take us beyond what we thought was our original destination. Karma is the setting in motion of those conditions on our path that foster learning. The concept of a source orchestrating all of this need not be pretentious. The spiritual externalist waits for reunification with the Creator after death, while the internalist feels part of a oneness each day. Spiritual insight comes to us in quiet, introspective, subtle moments which are manifested by the power of a single thought. Life is a matter of constant change toward fulfillment. Our place in the world today may be different tomorrow. We must learn to adapt to these different perspectives in life because that, too, is part of the plan for our development. In so doing, there is a transcendence of self from the masking process of a temporary outer shell to that which lies deep within our permanent soul mind. To uplift the human mind from feelings of disenchantment, we must expand our consciousness while forgiving ourselves for mistakes. I believe it is vital to our mental health that we laugh at ourselves and the foolish predicaments we get into along the road. Life is full of conflicts and the struggle, pain and happiness we experience are all reasons for our being here. Each day is a new beginning. I have a final quote that came from a subject who was preparing for another departure from the spirit world into a new incarnation on Earth. I think his statement offers a fitting conclusion to this book. Coming to Earth is about traveling away from our home to a foreign land. Some things seem familiar but most are strange until we get used to them, especially conditions which are unforgiving. Our real home is a place of absolute peace, total acceptance and complete love. As souls, separated from our home, we can no longer assume these beautiful features will be present around us. On Earth we must learn to cope with intolerance, anger and sadness while searching for joy and love. We must not lose our integrity along the way, sacrificing goodness for survival, and acquiring attitudes either superior or inferior to those around us. We know that living in an imperfect world will help us to appreciate the true meaning of perfection. We ask for courage and humility before our journey into another life. As we grow in awareness, so will the quality of our existence. This is how we are tested. Passing this test is our destiny. The end of this extract.